From 32 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada, our friend Elliot Friedman is aboard. Friege, how are you today?
Who says we're friends?
It's a good point. We're spouses by contract for work, I suppose. As my wife always says when she sees my phone, your work wife is calling. Oh, it must be Elliot. A couple of things here.
That was a hell of a prenup, everyone. I just want everyone to know it was a wild prenup battle. Who gets what? It was tough.
I get to glom on to 32 Thoughts for podcast form. hey, listen, Calgary Flames, three more
yes.
positive cases. And by the way, a really nice note on Twitter from Milan Lucic that many have already retweeted, which was a really nice touch. So that brings it to 9 players and a trainer as well. And I mentioned this right off the top. Craig Smith has entered COVID protocol for the Boston Bruins as well. They most recently played the Calgary Flames. We all have our fingers crossed, but we know how this sometimes works out. I don't know that there's any type of question here other than one of the points that I was making off the top is whether it's the Olympics or the NHL right now, COVID is calling all of the shots, Elliot.
Yeah, and you see it happening across other sports too. Adam Schefter reported yesterday 37 positive tests in the NFL, the NBA, now at a couple Bulls games canceled, including one against the Raptors. You know, we were talking yesterday, there's sometimes a bigger concern in hockey because of, you know, the rinks, the fact that ice is involved, and does it make it more transmissible because the COVID kind of hangs in the air there. But, you know, it's not like anybody's escaping this right now. I think it's tough to see, you know, only Calgary's games through Thursday have been canceled. And I realize I'm, you know, just spitballing right here, but it's tough to see them playing Saturday night against Columbus too, right? So we're lucky we have another game on Saturday night late. That's Edmonton, Seattle, or else, you know, we'd lose the back end of our doubleheader. It's just tough to see them playing. You know, one thing that's interesting here, Jeff, to me is that some of the American teams are saying that the testing results are too slow in Canada. And it's that, you know, in the U.S., there's much more available options for testing and results. They're much quicker. In Canada, there isn't the same marketplace for it. You know, Carolina got stuck in Vancouver yesterday before they could go to Minnesota. They were delayed about 5 hours. And then we found out that Aho, Jarvis, and team staffer had to stay behind in Vancouver. You know, a few of the American teams were saying to me that, you know, one of the things that concerns them about this particular situation involving Calgary and Carolina and potentially Boston and Vancouver is that, you know, is the fact that the results come back slower in Canada a factor that this spreads? And, you know, I don't know if there's an easy solve there, but I know the U.S. teams in particular are asking it.
Mm-hmm. Just as we were talking, the Colorado Avalanche placing Devon Taves on the NHL's COVID-19 protocol list as well. Justin Barron recalled from the Colorado Eagles. This Agatha Christie novel continues, you know, just as, you know, Tyler Bozak and Justin Falk are activated off of the list, you know, more players on other teams are going on here. Again, this will be... You know, this will lead to an Olympic question, and from the NHL's point of view, and again, Bill Daly, Gary Bettman haven't said that there's one very specific number that they're looking at, how many games have to be postponed until we say, you know, we cannot let players go because our schedule will not allow it. We're inching towards that discussion, but we still don't have any idea how many games of a postponement, like how much damage needs to be done to the schedule for the NHL to be able to step in and say, regardless of what the players want, you're not going to Beijing.
At the Board of Governors meetings this last week, the commissioner told the teams to expect to go.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, you know, he first of all, I think in 2018, it was the league that said, we're not going. And I don't think, for one thing, the league really wants to do it again. I think they would prefer if it got canceled, it would be the players' decision this time. Also, as Bettman and Daly have said, they made a deal with the players, and they feel they have to live up to it to the best of their abilities. And, you know, as someone pointed out to me, too, that in the CBA negotiations, there were concessions that the league got from the players because the players wanted the Olympics so badly. So I think there's also that part of it. If you get something for it, you have to live up to your end of the bargain. And yep. I believe that message was communicated as well. Now, we're at 8 games postponed now. Could be more. 2 of them have rescheduled. 6 have been not. The Calgary ones are particularly challenging, more than some of the other ones that we've seen postponed so far, Jeff, because one of them involves, Toronto's already done their California trip. They're doing their Western Canada trip now. They've already played in Winnipeg. So they're looking at this and they're like, Toronto's going to have to make a one stop or out to Calgary somewhere. That's a bit of more of a challenge. Also, Calgary with Nashville and Chicago, again, it's a long trip for the Flames. So this is probably the biggest annoyance they've faced yet in terms of game schedule that they have to fix. So,
Sorry, go ahead. No, go ahead. Finish up.
That's going to be a bigger challenge. But again, and I've had several governors say this to me, Bettman made it very clear that they should expect to go. So the league is going to work really hard here not to be the one that cancels this.
Well, here's another name, Barry Trotz, and Islanders head coach saying Matthew Barzal as well is in.
He's in COVID protocol. They're just bleeding out now, eh? Like, it's just every 2 minutes another name bleeds out.
Like I was saying, this is Agatha Christie novel. Like, this continues. This is, Orient Express. All of a sudden, the lights flicker, and there's more numbers. There's more of a count here. Whether it was, Ryan Lomberg earlier today, Craig Smith, the Boston Bruins, Devon Taves, Matthew Barzal. Listen, I hate opening the show like this every day, but there's the obligation to the news.
Unfortunately, it's a big story right now.
It's the big.
Look at the World Juniors. Like, look what's happening to some of these teams.
I know it's going to be like, ultimately, like, I don't know. And no one really knows. I mean, I was joking with you over text last night, here comes a return to the Scotia North Division, but none of us have answers. I don't think that there's any sort of contingency plan really that anybody has. And I'll just reiterate the point that I made off the top, like, COVID's calling the shots here. All that anyone can do is we can just react to it. Okay. So let's park that now briefly until 2 minutes from now when a team announces 6. What did you make of the Jim Rutherford?
One thing I want to add too is, so they had the Players Association, the players had their first two, I don't know if they were conference calls or Zoom calls yesterday. And, I've been spending a bit of time trying to figure out, what was said there. And basically what I can tell, Jeff, is that, the players have kind of been told, if you test positive there, you really lose control of the situation. It's no longer in your hands. You're kind of at the, I don't know if mercy is the right word, but you're at the control of the authorities in China. And they're going to decide when you get to leave and how you get to leave. And I got some notes yesterday from people saying, look, there's nothing in the protocol that says 3 to 5 weeks. And there's nothing in the new playbook that got released that says 3 to 5 weeks. And I said, and so I went back and I checked it, and I was told, yes, that's true, but that's what you have to be prepared for. You have to be in the mindset that if you're going over there and you test positive, it could be 3 to 5 weeks.
That's Chinese law. That's outside of the handbook. That's Chinese law.
Exactly. So that's kind of what they're telling them. I think we're going to see, like Ryan McDonough said this morning, he still thinks players want to go. I saw the U.S. Olympic Hockey Brain Trust said today they're still trying to wrap their heads around it. I guess Alex Pietrangelo came out and said, it's tougher to justify if you have a family. I think, as you can expect, people are all over the map on this, and everybody's going to have a different answer. It sounds to me like right now the decision is going to be left up to the individual player, but we've got some time to figure this out here, I think. I also believe that there's going to be some more lobbying behind the scenes from, maybe the International Olympic Committee and things like that, saying, it's important for the Winter Olympics that the NHLers are here. Is there anything else we can do? And I don't know if the answer will be yes or no to that, but I do think it's going to go on.
One of the things that I was, because like you, I was, making calls about this in advance of Hockey Night on Saturday. And one of the things in the, anyone that I would talk to who was pro players going or wanted, you know, what I was reminded of time and time again is this is a bubble environment. The NHL has done successful bubbles before in Edmonton and Toronto. Are there risks? Absolutely. But it's not as if they can't do this because they've done it before. That's the message that I was greeted with over the weekend. Did you get the same?
Yeah, I think it depends on the people you talk to and also, like, you know, how self-interested they are. How does it affect them if the players go or the players don't go? So sometimes you just have to sort out, okay, what space is this person coming from? What's, you know, it's like the old Batman question, who benefits, right? So yeah, that's kind of the way you look at it. But, you know, I think deep down, you know, I think the players do want to go still. I think it's important to them. You know, I think that there are still some of them who look at it and say, you know, like, it's interesting. Like, I was talking about this, you know, earlier today. I can't remember if I was talking about this with you or with someone else, but if I was a single guy on a bad team, I'd be like, I'm going.
Going.
You know what? Like, I'm in.
Get me out of here.
If I was a single guy on the 29th place team in the NHL and I knew I wasn't going to the playoffs, I'm in. Yeah. Like, you know, it's an adventure. You know, what could possibly happen? Because that's the way I thought at that age. But, you know, if you're on a good team and especially a good team that's paying you really well and you had a chance to win, I have to admit, I would be thinking a bit differently. And if I had a family that really depended on me, even if a good team or bad, I think it would be very hard for me to say yes. So I think all of that, you know, if I thought that this would be my only chance to be an Olympian, if I'd been there before, or if I thought, oh, you know what, I'm going to have other chances, I mean, all of these things define your situation, right? And so I'm not surprised at all. The responses are all over the map.
What did we talk about on the last podcast? Like, players that missed their Olympic window, whether it's, you know, Mark Giordano, Taylor Hall, Pekka Rinne, like, there are guys and they don't want to live with their regret. Like, I get it. And I also get that these aren't just going to be hockey decisions, that these are going to be family decisions as well. Let me ask you about Rutherford yesterday. Jim Rutherford meets the media for the first time. And we all know that not only is the head coach chatty, but so is the president and interim general manager. And I think that the one thing that I took away from it, and we shouldn't be surprised because this is Jim Rutherford, is just how, and you mentioned this, I think, yesterday, he tells you what he wants to do. He tells you what his plan is. He's very upfront. He's very direct. You know, he'll question whether he'll have the ability to do it or the environment will be there to accomplish what he wants to do. But he's someone that if you ask him a question, he will give you an answer. What were your takeaways from Rutherford yesterday?
Well, I just think he's really comfortable in the environment, right? Like, as you said it, he didn't run away from any questions. You know, he said, look, what does the team need? I'm going to punt that one for a month. And he says, I know you're all going to be calling me on January 31st to ask me what I think now. But, you know, he didn't duck away from any questions that were asked to him. You know, they were asked questions about the Vertanen investigation, the situation in Wilkes-Barre, and he didn't run away from them. He answered them. And, you know, I think that that's kind of the way that Rutherford is going to be. And, you know, I just think that right now, you know, I look, Bruce Boudreau and the Canucks, like, they've bought everyone there some time. You know, all of a sudden everybody's looking at this and they're saying, okay, they're 4-0 since Boudreau got there. And you know what I really like too is the fact that they beat Carolina the other night and Boudreau says, yeah, but you know, they're on a back to back at the end of a Canadian trip. Like, these guys don't sugarcoat anything. They're very blunt. But you know, right now they've bought time. The Canucks are doing well. Everybody's saying, okay, maybe this can work. People are doing like joke Time Man of the Year covers with Boudreau's face on it. Like, everybody's in a great mood right now. So, you know, they can buy time and kind of figure this out as Rutherford shapes his front office. And, You know, I think the other thing there, I think that's going to be, you know, just kind of interesting is, you know, just I'm really curious to watch Horvat right now, because I think Horvat is right on the bubble of the Canadian Olympic team. I think he's one of those guys that they're deciding on. I think they kind of like him. And, you know, unfortunately, the way that team started kind of killed everyone's stock. But I still think he's on their radar. And I'm just very curious to see where that's going to go over the next little while.
Vancouver faces off against Columbus Blue Jackets, looking to extend that 1-5. Watch it on Sportsnet Pacific. I mentioned off the top as well. Oh, by the way, one more thing on Rutherford. Mentioning that he has 40 candidates in mind, or has a list.
Why didn't he just pick like 10,000? I have 10,000 candidates.
Just say something completely outrageous and buy yourself even more time as we go through resumes.
Sometimes I just think people say things to make the media go away.
I think it was a long flight from Toronto to Vancouver, and he sat there with a notepad and he wrote down a number of names, and by the time he landed, he came up with 40.
It could be. It makes a lot of sense. By the way, one of my buddies was texting me last night. He says, it's making me violently ill to think that two Leaf fans are saving our team. Just so you know, that really resonated yesterday.
This further to the Toronto to the rescue for Vancouver. Yes. Send for Boudreau and send for Rutherford.
Yes.
They put their Toronto capes on and go rescue the Vancouver Canucks. That'll go really well. Any names for you that should be more obvious than others? We've talked plenty about Mark Hunter, and you mentioned, you know, Patrick Alvin as well, and maybe Botterill. And
there is another name I'm working for the AGM role. There's another name I'm working on, but I don't have it 100% confirmed yet. And they are working for another team, so I just want to make sure I nail it down. That's all.
So I spoke to someone this morning on an NHL team and asked about, you know, how many teams would during the season allow, you know, AGMs to interview with teams for a general manager position. Like in the off season, it's one thing; during the season is another. And this person indicated to me that he couldn't see many, if any, situations where the general manager says, "Yeah, don't do it, or we're not going to give you permission." What do you think about that?
He said that he does think that person will get permission. He does.
Correct. Yes.
Oh, okay, because I've heard very mixed. I've heard some people say no way. Although I will say this, like, so I was talking to somebody about LV, and you know, so we talked about it, I think, yesterday, and he said to me that, and this is a guy who's not inclined to give, he doesn't like messing around with his front office during the season. However, he said after he thought about it, he said if he was in charge of a guy like Alvin, he would say, if it's for the AGM job, I'm not giving you permission. But if it's for the GM job, he would have to really think about it. You can't. He says these jobs are so hard to get and don't come available too often. He feels that you kind of have to give. But the other thing that happens, I think, now a lot more, Jeff, is what he was telling me is that the teams are do a lot more due diligence now about, is this person really a contender? And they ask very pointed questions about, are you just interviewing this person for show? Are you just introducing this person to get more intel? I don't know how you can really define if someone's a contender one way or not another, but he does say that more teams now, like they say, if you're interviewing 30 guys or 40 guys and our person is just one of those men or women, I don't want you to do that. I'm not letting you do that. I'm not letting you steal info about our best practices, or I'm not letting you just interview this person so you can say I interviewed this person. They want to know they're a legit contender. I think in Alvin's case, he probably would be.
So this is why, I'm glad you got us there. This is why I think many people were curious at the Francesco Aquilini moving quickly on Jim Rutherford instead of going through a lengthy interview process where, to your point, and we always see this, heck, we see this at Combine when they interview kids, even if they're not going to draft them, interview them because you can grab intel about other players. Why would you not want to go through a process where you bring in as many candidates as possible just to gather information on other teams that becomes then part of your information package?
They went to Rutherford quick.
No, I know, but even like, honestly, Elliot,
like I would do that.
Sure.
But like if I was in charge of a team and I wanted to bring someone in to tell you how to become a good podcaster, I would interview 10,000 people. But the other people, the other people might not want you to steal their info. I think that's happening. I have to say that in recent years, like maybe the last year or two, I've started to have more people tell me that. And I forgot about that until yesterday when I had this conversation, that we'd want to know that this person's a legit contender and not just a person that they're interviewing to say, we interviewed 36 people.
So you remember the year that the Philadelphia Flyers drafted Claude Giroux and Bobby Clarke?
Of course.
Right?
Yes.
I was told the backstory on that. If you'll recall, a couple of weeks before the draft, Ron Hextall had left the Philadelphia Flyers organization to join Dean Lombardi in Los Angeles. And with him took, you know, whether it's draft lists or intel from the Philadelphia Flyers' point of view on, you know, who they like and why they like them. And the Los Angeles Kings took Trevor Lewis, whom many believed Bobby Clarke was coveting at his spot, and Clarke was so mad that by the time he's so mad that Hextall had gone, they took his guy and he took that intel, that he had forgotten who he was going to choose when he went up there. And that's why I said, Homer, who are we taking? Because essentially, to your point, he had left with all of that information, and the Los Angeles Kings ended up scooping Trevor Lewis before Bobby Clarke and the Philadelphia Flyers were able to.
I think the Flyers did okay. Like, I have to say,
I think the Flyers came out. That is a wonderful, at the time, it's very unfortunate. If you Philadelphia Flyers, it worked out just fine.
You know, there's so many great stories like that. I read, I read a book called The GM, and it's about Ernie Accorsi, who used to be a GM of a football team, the Giants, I think the Browns too. And they were talking about one year in the NFL draft that Paul Brown, who's like a legendary football coach and the guy the Cleveland Browns are named after, he wanted to draft a quarterback named Len Dawson. Now, Len Dawson was a really good player. He's in the Hall of Fame, and he quarterbacked the Chiefs to a Super Bowl in like 1970. But he got picked right before them, so he was totally devastated. And he couldn't make a pick, and the league was like, okay, who are you taking? Who are you taking? And so, of course, he said they grabbed the draft list, and they just drafted the next guy on the list. And it was Jim Brown. Like, I think it worked out okay for them.
Worked out fine. Salt on the wound on that one. There's another part of the story that I was reminded of a while ago. Was one pick before Philadelphia, a team grabbed Bobby Sanguinetti, the defenseman from Owen Sound, which was another player that the Philadelphia Flyers wanted if it weren't going to be Trevor Lewis. That team was the New York Rangers. So they didn't get their guy, and their second pick was taken from one of their chief rivals, the New York Rangers. So that was salt on an open wound there. And with that, Elliot, we will end story time. And you can get on with
that. Story time with together. Jeff and Elliot. Yeah.
That's going to be us one day when we're seniors, right? We're just doing a podcast. We're like 85 years old. It's just going to be old draft stories, you and me.
You know what? We're already like that now. Like, what do you mean then? Like, you and I we're like two old men fishing.
Stadler and Waldorf of podcasts.
What else do you have on today?
Well, we've got Linda Cohen coming up in a little bit. Next, we're going to be joined by Eric Francis. Another EF is going to be topping the stop. We filled the first hour with as many EFs as we can. So Francis is coming up. We'll talk more about the Calgary Flames situation. Linda Cohen, top of hour two. And then Mike Comito, our good friend, is talking to us about his latest offering, Hockey 365, the second period. More daily stories from the ice. Yesterday on the show, Brian McFarland stopped by. I could listen to forever. So
yeah, it's, nice man. Nice man.
Christmas time, right? Like, help people sell some books here. Just, you know, we're not trying to put a person on the moon. We're just trying to help sell a book. all right. You be good for each. Thanks, pal.
All right. Bye, Merrick.